Jules, you run a tight ship around here.
Oh, no, I'm a big slot.
15 minutes late.
Joint Committee, tax credits will come to order. My understanding is that there is a 10 o'clock floor, so we'll need to get moving. Colleagues, we have, once again, the large amendment, omnibus amendment before us today, the dash sevens that we're on 3672. We're still waiting on a little bit of paperwork to come in. Hopefully that will come in shortly. And in the meantime, it's the intention to walk through the amendment, get everybody comfortable with it, and if the if it is the committee's pleasure, move some of the amendments into the bill, and we'll go from there. So, Chris, why don't you start us out on the dash sevens?
Sorry about that.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash sevens are largely the same as the dash six. There are a handful of specific changes. Generally, there's a kind of a one-word change here or there. I can go through those if you'd like.
I think it'd be helpful just to go through it briefly so people see it.
So starting on, as usual, section one. On page two, lines 3 through 5, this is the language, this is part of the modification to the sunset date. And so the final cert sunset date is being moved from July 1st, 2012 to January 1st, 2013. So that's a six-month extension. Or if the project can demonstrate to the State Department of Energy that evidence has begun, that construction has begun by April 15th of 2011. So for the most part, there's that final cert deadline, but if a project has broken ground by April 15th of this year, then they're essentially exempt from that, the new final cert. It's kind of, it's an or situation there. So there's that clarification. On page 3, line 11, the words yard or were removed, and that's to make consistent with the yard debris being removed from the biomass credit. On page 4, I'm sorry, I'm going back and forth between the... Yeah, on page 4, lines 3 and 4, there's now no change. What had been there is on line 4, the credit is certified under subsection 5 of this section. That language had been replaced with language that said the agricultural producer or biomass collector transfers biomass to a biofuel producer or oilseed processor. That change was undone because that new language created some problems for companies who transferred the material within their own structure, kind of from one subsidiary to another that wasn't considered transferred, so it created some problems there. So there's no change. On page 11, line 13, that sentence now ends at after the word section. The words that were deleted were the words "and issue tax credit for certifications under this section." There was a duplication in the bill. Here, late in the following section, it stated that the Film and Video Office would issue the certificates, and in this section there was confusion because it identified both the Department of Revenue and the Film and Video Office. So that language is deleted. It's in a subsequent section clarifying that it's the Film and Video Office that issues the certificates. On page 14, line 16, the word upcoming is the new language. It replaces the language. The old word was current, and the idea here is that the Section 13 should, the goal for this is that the appropriation, the decision to appropriate money needs to occur before the fiscal year begins. These credits are sold at the beginning of the fiscal year, so they're pretty much sold in July. And we want to avoid a situation where the credits are sold in July and then they are rescinded either after July or even after taxpayers claim them on their tax return. So the decision to appropriate needs to occur before the fiscal year.
Madam Chair, that was, I consider that a feature, not a bug. So we've removed the feature.
You have a comment on that, Chris?
I don't think so.
It does mean that if this were a year in which we were dealing with, which I don't think we are, this coming year, it's now too late for the legislature to make an appropriation.
Correct. Technically, what it would mean, if this law were in effect right now, the legislature would have to make the appropriation now to essentially prevent the sale of the credits next month.
Well, would have had to have done it before now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, up to 30 days before, yes. Yeah, they would have
By the end of May.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it to the committee whether that's workable or not. It doesn't seem workable to me, given the Ways and Means operating schedule.
Let's move on. I think it could be faster.
Okay, the next change is in the Jenny. And page 24. On line 4, that sentence now ends after the word section. The words deleted are the and issue tax credit certifications under this section. This is a similar change to the film and video office, so there's not a duplication of who's issuing the tax certificates. Next change is on page 30. Subsection 4, lines 3 through 7, and focusing on lines 4 and 5 that read, in part, when combined with other government incentives or grants available to the applicant, the word loans was removed from that. Next change, page 31, line 16. The date that date 2012 is new. It had been 2013. So basically, the Department of Revenue and Energy will be reporting to the in the February session on how the auction process had gone, or how it was going.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I've lost track of where we are.
We were just on the change that I just mentioned. It's on page 31, line 16.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Then the next change is in section 39, which starts on page 35. The change is on line or page 36. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not right. Yeah, it's on page 36. Line 7 and 8. Reading in part the phrase, whether the energy savings of the project benefit a party other than the owner. That had been its own paragraph in subsection 1. It just got moved into part of the list in subsection 2. So the way the section 39 reads, the section 39 is where the tiered system had been, but it's been removed. So subsection 1 refers to determining a priority system relating to energy savings over the 5 years. And in the dash 6, it had equated at that level the projects where the person who benefits and the project owner are different. So this just moves it from that higher level, if you will, into part of the list on subsection 2.
Okay.
The next change is on page 40. In section 45, which is the language pertaining to the issuance of the final certification, the new language here is on lines 19 and 20. That paragraph A, it states that in order to get a final cert, the project has to be installed or constructed under a preliminary cert. But you had made changes. One of the policy changes was that for small projects less than $20,000, the pre-cert was waived. So there seemed to be a conflict there. So the second part of that paragraph A, the unless preliminary certification is waived under section 43, refers to that. The next change is on page 45. Section 49, line 5. It's the $28 million instead of the $30
million. $28 million, that's probably...
Yeah, I know. Okay, there it is.
The next change is on page 48. Section 56, which are the definitions, on line 11. The definition of cost now includes capital expenditures that had been in there in earlier versions. It was missing from the dash 6, so the literal change was the words capital expenditures and were included in the are included in the dash 7.
This is the trend.
Also, I should mention in section 56, there wasn't a change, but in the definition of transportation project, there was a question of whether or not the qualifier of public. There are two types of transportation projects, basically the transit services and the alternative fuel vehicle infrastructure projects. There had been a question about the qualifier of public or nonprofit, which applies to the transit services. The question was whether or not that public or nonprofit applied to the alternative fuel vehicle infrastructure, and it does not. And in consulting with Ledge Council, to be very specific, painfully specific, on line 15, the comma there is what separates that reading. So there's no change in the dash 7, but just to clarify that, address that question. The next change is on page 51. It's in section 59. It's line 3 on page 51. The phrase in accordance with ORS chapter 183. This is the section that deals with the revocation or suspension of certifications. And that's just making it consistent in all the places where the revocation exists. There needs to be this reference to chapter 183 dealing with contested cases. Then the next change is in the RETC, which starts on page 56. on page 58, it's a deletion. After line 9 in the dash 6, there had been language that referred to an air-to-air heat pump and hydronic air handler. That language has been removed. So the line 9 is where it was in the dash 6. The next change is in the definition of appliance, which is on page 65. So in line 6 and 7, reading in part, it now says gas water heaters. It had said gas heat pump water heaters. Heat pump has been deleted. The next change is on page 70. Line 26. That sentence had ended with the word process, which didn't make much sense, so the word process was deleted. There was a question on page 74, section 76, pertaining to the Public Utility Commission report that you requested for February 2012. There was a question about whether or not that report would include RETC, and the existing language does address RETC. It's the ORS. The reference is ORS 316-116. So there's no change. It was just a question about that.
Thank you, Chris. And I am remembering the words of my wise co-chair, Representative Berger, from yesterday, saying that in February we'll be saying phrases such as, this is just a cleanup to Hospital 3672 from last session, so I'm sure there are other issues, but it looks like it's there.
Well, I think it's pretty good.
Colleagues, what's your pleasure on the additions? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Question for clarification. And peace of mind, I guess. You know, we're all sitting here because tax expenditures and credits are a elusive item in as far as revenue, because nobody actually writes a check. And so it kind of went unchecked, so to speak. And so all of a sudden we discovered that we were keeping a lot of revenue from hitting the general fund. So does this bill give us enough sidebars and criteria to make sure that the department is, in fact, going along with the grid that we were given yesterday? I mean, how are they tabulating so that they know they're not going to be going over any of these items? I think some of it is laid out here, particularly in appropriations. But because there is no check written, it's kind of hard to track the expenditures or the granting of certain expenditures and credits. So I'm just wondering how that's going to be implemented.
Thank you, Senator. I think that's an excellent question, one that's certainly been on the minds of the committee as we've worked to craft this. In some cases, we have transferred to a check written to get exactly that problem, for example, with the Jenny, and to get away from that potential balloon. We've put caps and sunsets throughout the bill, and in the case of the RETC, ask that some of the folks come in for that pre-certification so the department has the opportunity to actually enforce and to track that progress towards the cap to get at that issue. My hope is that we've buttoned that down in here, but if there are any other comments from staff or committee.
Well, a follow-up, if I may.
Yes.
So when we put caps in here, and no problem, but how will the department make sure, either will they run a tab? I mean, how will they ensure that they don't go over the cap?
To hear from the department.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I am Bob Repine, Acting Director for the Department of Energy. To the Senator's question, our current practice or experiences related to the TIER program, which is a combination of creating buckets of funds for different sized projects and TIER or caps associated to each one of those. We've been able to manage those as those awards are reviewed and made available to the applicant. Then that amount of money is set aside as money out of that cap limit. And so for the $300 million that you awarded based on the 2010 February session, we have been able to manage that amount to not exceed that $300 million. Not knowing quite all the dynamics of what this one implies, this bill, but I think, as the chair mentioned, the CONI, which has a cap to it, even though it doesn't have the tiers, we'll have to develop a process. But we would either put out amounts of money pertaining to different types of conservation activities and not to exceed those amounts. Or if we choose not to do that and we run it out as a first-come, first-serve, as the CONI runs today, we would start monitoring or throttling back the amount that's available and let people know that we would be coming up on the maximum amount, and then note people on our website, which is how most people find this program, that, in fact, we've run out of money. And if we do pass that over that threshold of that amount, we exceed it with applications coming in, it'll be based on who came in first, and we'll reduce it backwards and so we don't pass over those thresholds that you've set in this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Are we ready on the dash sevens?
Do we have the paperwork on the dash three?
Well, let's start with the dash sevens and then can move to the next.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash seven amendments to House Bill 3672.
Co-Chair Berger moves the dash seven amendments to House Bill 3672. Discussion. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just simply want to note that I have enormous gratitude for those of you who have been working like crazy on this piece, and the evidence of the work is here in the dash seven amendments. I don't want to belabor it, but I want to know that those of us who've been in the trenches acknowledge that the finishing of this thing is an enormously complex process. And my gratitude, at least, for the work that you've done, you and the other co-chairs have done, getting this ready.
Thank you, Representative. I would say it is no understatement to say that it has been a team effort for many folks.
And Mr. Chair, while we're in discussion on this, Legislative Council and our LRO staff have stayed up all night several times to get this done. I mean, it is almost miraculous to have an amendment of this size decided upon in the afternoon and ready by 9 o'clock the next morning. And so I just want to give a special shout-out to the staff, both LC and our LRO staff.
Absolutely. Coach Berger.
Acknowledgement also has been made to the Department of Energy and their staff, who have been available, answered every question, tried to explain complex things that in past history. This has been an enormous team effort.
Great. Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion is adopted. And we have another amendment to this bill, the dash threes. Chris, do you want to remind us what the dash threes are?
The dash three pertains to the Oregon Investment Advantage Program, which partially sunset at the beginning of this year in terms of the counties that would qualify. It does two things. It extends the qualification criteria from last year that had been in place for 06 through 010. It continues that through until July 1, 2016, and the criteria are related to the unemployment rates in the counties and the per capita income. Basically, they have to have high unemployment or low income. One other change is that it would require businesses to be in operation for 24 months before they could obtain certification. And you do have a revenue impact statement somewhere in your paperwork that shows a zero revenue impact for 1113. and a relatively small revenue loss for the biennial or two after that.
Co-Chair Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3672 and speak to the motion.
Please. Co-Chair Berger moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3672. To your motion.
Thank you. When you have a work of such incredible magnitude as this, it's hard to find a small amendment. But I support this amendment not just for the fact of this program and its continuation, but the proponents coming forward and looking at our criteria for having skin in the game, not the fiscal giveaways, and basically saying if this program goes forward, it has to go forward with the kind of sideboards we're looking for within the main bill. And that's why I look very favorably upon this amendment and the program continuing under some excellent sideboards that fit with our vision for this program.
Thank you. Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, motion carries. And colleagues, we do not have the paperwork yet on 3672, so we will have to pause on 3672 for the moment. And I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3606.
Yeah.
Chris, you want to remind us where we are on this one?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3606 pertains to the old Betsy program. You discussed this in committee yesterday. Just to remind you that you do have a Dash 7 before you that was discussed yesterday.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Co-Chair Berger.
I move the Dash 7 A7 amendments to House Bill 3606.
Co-Chair Berger moves the Dash A7 amendments to House Bill 3606. Is there discussion? Objection? Seeing none, motion carries. We're also waiting on the paperwork on this one. Okay, so we will pause that work session. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 817.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 817 I'm buried in paperwork, so. This is the program that creates the Oregon Low-Income Community Jobs Initiative. It encourages qualified equity investments in certain communities and creates a tax credit equal to 39% of the qualified investment. There's no credit for the first 2 years. There's a 7% credit in year three and then an 8-year credit in each of the subsequent years. There's a fee. It limits qualified investments to small businesses. You also have in front of you a Dash 1, which makes some technical changes to it. For example, the small business qualification is increased from $3 million to $4 million, and then it puts restrictions on the amount of investment in real estate. And you have a revenue impact, which I handed mine off to somebody. It had no revenue impact. It had no revenue impact in 11-13, a loss of about $2 million in 13-15 and $7 million in 15-17. And those estimates are derived at assumptions about when the investments would occur. The assumption I used was that the 25% of the allowed investments would occur in 2012, 50% in 13, and 25% in 2014. The program does contain an overall cap for the total amount of investment. So that's why it's structured that way.
I'd like to go ahead and...
Put the amendment
in. Well, I was going to have folks describe the amendment to us.
Great.
That's okay. And I'd like to call forward Ryan Brennan, Kevin Campbell. Thank you, gentlemen.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Victory Group, and I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 817 and the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 817. There are a few changes in the Dash 1s that we think improve the overall measure. Over this last, actually, this is the third session where we've talked about this bill, and the bill has seen a number of amendments over the years, all designed to improve this and make it better for the state in terms of the investment of these credits, so that it will really result in the creation of jobs, and it will not represent tax credits that aren't smart and strategic. The changes in the Dash 1 amendments, there's a few important changes. The first one I want to mention is it does increase the fee for companies that are bringing their federal new markets allocation to the state for investment. It increases that fee to qualify for the first year to $20,000. And the purpose for that is to cover the costs, the administrative costs of this program. And so that amendment is designed so that there is no impact on the state, that fee would be $20,000. And then for every year that that company continues to invest over the years, they would pay a $1,000 renewal fee in addition. That's the first amendment. The second amendment I want to mention has to do with the cap on investment. As you know, there are a number of businesses that wanted to have a very large cap on the investment, and they also wanted to be able to invest in real estate projects. Neither of those are particularly important to the Campbells personally. We're much more interested in a tax credit that really results in business growth and investment, where jobs are the result. Real estate has a place. The federal new markets on the federal level allows that. We're creating an additional restriction in an amendment that is on page one that deals with Section 45D of the Internal Revenue Code, and then adds an additional restriction to it so that it's clear that this is for business and not real estate companies for investment. And then the third amendment that I want to mention to you, I mentioned the cap briefly, is at $4 million. I think that the design is to make sure that the cap isn't so high that a few investments end up gobbling this up. What we really want is the maximum number of investments around the state so that communities throughout the state can benefit. We feel like the $4 million amount is the proper amount to do that. Of course, it doesn't require that those investments be that big. It can be anything beneath that, and I'm sure there will be many that will be smaller projects, but we didn't want it to allow it to get above that $4 million. Each of these amendments were in request requested by the co-chairs to address different issues, and so we've wanted to, on every occasion, come back and make sure that we're making the changes that make you feel comfortable that this actually accomplishes the purpose for which it's designed to accomplish. Examples of that are, as you know, in the bill as it currently exists, there is no stacking of credits. There is no selling of credits. We created as many sideboards as possible to make sure that this wasn't a tax credit, that it just was a benefit to companies that are investors. We wanted to make sure it trickled down. It really made a difference on the ground in terms of job creation. So there are a few other minor amendments in here as well. All of them are based on the experience of Missouri and a couple other states that have had a chance to trial run this over the years now, that actually have experience with issuing the credits, actually have experience with jobs on the ground as a result, and can actually talk about what they've done and how this has worked. I'm thankful that there is an experience out there and we're not on the front end. This would be a very difficult project to sell without someone else taking that lead and having the experience, and I feel like their experience tells us it's a worthwhile endeavor and may help us at a time where we do have very, very limited options and where capital is so restricted that a very good business that on a good day in a time when our state was well off might happen without any problem today has trouble finding capital to even get started. That's the purpose of this bill, and I appreciate the time to explain the Dash 1 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for these gentlemen? Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it may be that I'm confused. This is a complex bill, and I've been studying it carefully over in fits and starts for months. I'm looking at the top of page 5, where it talks about the amount of the tax credits that can be utilized in any one tax year at $16 million. Looking at the revenue estimates for this, it looks as though our estimate is that quite a bit less than that's actually going to be utilized. Is that your understanding?
Maybe a staff question as well.
Well, it might be, but yeah. These are the gentlemen with the experience in dealing with the New Markets Credit.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, I will let Ryan Brennan take a shot at this because he has the familiarity with how this has worked in other states in particular and how the money might flow. And, of course, Representative, I wanted to make sure we had a chance to talk about the questions you might have, which is I wanted to get that why I got the information to you early on this. And so we'll do our very best to get you answers to your questions, we'll give it our best shot today. Thank you.
Co-chairs, Representative Barnhart, my name is Ryan Brennan with Advantage Capital, and from reviewing the fiscal note that I believe I saw recently, I think the idea reflected is that several of the other states have found that the programs go quickly but not immediately. So what I saw is a phasing utilization of the credits, assuming that all credits wouldn't be asked for and investments made immediately upon kickoff of the program. What we've seen in states like Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Illinois, is that it's usually over the first 1 to 2 years after programs kick off that funds from out of state will become aware that the program is available, then deploy capital, and only once they make those investments do the credits begin. So thus, I think you see a staggered in the fiscal note.
Thank you. I have a different Please. Question, if I could. Well, that explains then the difference between the $78 million it looks like we're spending and what it is actually showing up on the revenue estimate, I think, because it's a phase-in. Eventually, we'll end up spending the whole $78 million, won't we, over a period of years?
Co-chairs, Representative Barnhart, assuming that the money is invested, the only way that the credits are utilized is if people do decide to bring their federal allocation to Oregon and invest the money, that's the only way that the full cap would be realized.
And I want to make a clarification to your previous question, Representative. Mm-hmm. The $16 million cap is not for a particular year. It's for all the years. It's a total program cap, which is why...
That isn't what it says, Mr. Chair.
That's the clarification I just received from staff.
But I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. With due respect, that's not what the Section 7 says. It says you can't spend more than $16 million in any tax year. It doesn't say that there's an overall total cap of $16 million. And it may be, if that's the intent, we need to write an amendment to affect that.
Chris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that I can confer again with Ledge Council. That was my discussion with Ledge Council, is that was the interpretation of the Section 7. But we can I can do some more follow-up to clarify your question.
Well, if I could, Mr. Chair, one of my other questions was what tax year are we talking about? Because, of course, every business may have a different kind of tax year than what we have. At minimum, this Section 7 is extremely vague and subject to interpretation. If it really is intended to have an overall total cap of tax expenditures of $16 million, we should say that explicitly.
Representative Byrd, I'm going to pause you for one moment. Representative Byrd,
thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to Representative Barnhart's question in Section 7, the term utilization is very specific. And if we look at line 6 on page 5, it talks about scheduled utilization of tax credits. And that, because of the carryover effect, this is the multiple-year carryover where the utilization, the year-generated credit is different. And I think that might be speaking to what you're talking about. But the utilization is when are those credits actually going to be used. And this is limiting it to $16 million scheduled of utilization for multiple years in any one year.
Getting nods from the two CPAs down this end.
Well, with respect, Mr. Chair, that isn't what the bill says.
Do you have a follow-up question, Representative Barnhart?
Yeah, I have a number of other questions, but on different topics, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. I note that on page 3, lines 1 through 7, there's a whole section on reports to the department. I've looked around in this bill. I haven't been able to find anything else other than these limits that we've already talked about that appears to set anything like a sideboard on this bill. There's no particular jobs creation requirement for any of these any businesses qualifying for these kinds of investments. Is there in this bill?
Co-chairs, Representative Barnhart, when you talk about sideboards, we certainly think that there are significant sideboards. In addition to the federal, which specifically target business location eligibility, mm-hmm. and then the addition here, which really are two of the tightest sideboards that any state has used, a $4 million in the amendment, $4 million cap, and then in addition, non-real estate. Those, we believe, are very tight sideboards targeting businesses. There's no job creation mandate, although that has been the experience in each of the eight states and of the federal program. Once these businesses have capital available, they're spending it on equipment, they're spending it on people, and that's how the system here is designed as well.
Okay. Follow-up. I'm referring to the same section, page 3, lines 1 through 7. It appears that there's a requirement here that there be a report made to the department about the number of employment positions created and retained, annual salary, and a couple of other things. Have other states had reporting requirements like this, and what kind of results do we get when we have reporting requirements like this? In terms of the answers to those questions.
Co-chairs, Representative Barnhart, other states do have reporting requirements, but I'll tell you, these are as thorough as we've seen anywhere. Several of the reports that are publicly available from early experience in states, Missouri has the deepest experience, and their experience continues to be significant. The state reports, not a private report, the state reports a little over 1,700 jobs created and retained in the first 2.5 years, and they haven't had any tax credits utilized yet. They believe over 3,000 indirect, direct, and indirect jobs. So, yes, Representative, other states do produce these reports, and thus far the reports look very good.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, additional?
One more. Just a reminder that the Senate has floor at 10 o'clock.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Additional follow-up, and this may be for staff, and maybe we'll take my answer later, and that is this reporting requirement covered under the new transparency law the governor signed a couple days ago? I'll leave that for staff. I've got several other questions, but they probably pertain, Mr. Chair, to the department rather than to the witnesses you have here now, mostly having to do with the administration of the tax and the application process and the day limits that they face in order to comply. These day limits seem pretty strict to me. And I'm wondering about that. But I can see we're out of time, and I'll defer the rest of my questions till the next time you open on this, if I may.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And could I just simply say it would really be wonderful to have a clear clarification in writing of the $16 million issue. That one is a very important one to me.
Great. Thank you. Okay. We are going to pause on the work session on 8:17. For now, and we're going to reopen a work session on 3672.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick. Too many B's.
We have our fiscal impact statement now, so our last barrier to moving this landmark piece of legislation has been removed. So, therefore, I move that House Bill 3672, as amended, be reported out, do pass.
Senator Burdick moves that House Bill 3672, as amended, be reported out with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Motion passes. We're on our way to the floor on that puppy.
Hey.
Colleagues, we are going to stand in recess on the...
Jules, yeah. Carriers.
Oh, Carriers.
Morrison Burdick for the Senate.
We'll have Morrison Burdick as co-carriers for the Senate and Bailey and Berger as co-carriers for the House. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3672. And, colleagues, we're going to stand in recess. We don't have the paperwork on the other bills today, so we're going to stand in recess to time indefinite to call the chair until hopefully later today. And with that, we are going to recess the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.